Hello, Tech fans, and welcome into the latest episode of the Tech Sideline Podcast as we record on Monday, November 22nd, 2021 at 10:30 in the morning. Today, we'll review Virginia Tech's loss to Miami. We'll talk about the Virginia Tech football coaching search, and we'll bring you up to speed on the Virginia Tech men's basketball the week ahead and what's just happened. It's all coming up right now on the Tech Sideline Podcast. Welcome back in to episode 210 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. I'm your host for today, Will Stewart, Tech Sideline's founder, general manager, and owner. It's Thanksgiving week, so I'm filling in for Jake, who has run off to Nashville once again. We'll have to ask him why he's always going to Nashville.
He's a big Titans fan, apparently.
So we welcome you, whether you're watching live on YouTube or watching or listening archived on YouTube, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or you're playing video games in your bedroom while your elderly mother yells at you from the living room telling you all the brilliant things we are saying, we're glad you're with us. See, I had to pause there. Did you get the little Will Ferrell Wedding Crashers reference?
I got you.
So speaking of Will Ferrell, if you're watching on YouTube, in the words of Will Ferrell, stop what you're doing and listen. Click like and subscribe right now. I'll wait. Okay, thank you. To my left, as always, is Chris Coleman, our lead analyst and columnist. And across the way in the chair I usually occupy, we've got Nick Brown, who usually sits in the fourth chair on Mondays. But we've drafted him to fill out the chairs here on the set. As always, producing, we have my progeny, Malcolm Stewart. And once again, a reminder that the Tech Sideline Podcast is sponsored by the Southeast Regional Training Center. Always remember and never forget, the SERTC relies on your donations to fund their operations, and Virginia Tech Wrestling relies on the SERTC. So visit southeastrtc.com for more details. So as always, when I host, I just read the entire opening script. One day when I grow up, I want to be like Jake Lyman or Evan Hughes, but I'm just not there yet, so I got to read. So everybody, welcome in. Let's get started. So, Chris, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was pretty uneventful.
Spent
most of it working, actually, working on a coaching column, and watched the football game Saturday night, and then spent most of the day yesterday and even into the night working on the coaching column with a break to go to the Virginia Tech basketball game.
I thought you were going to say a break to go to the bathroom.
No, none of those. Just to go to the
bathroom. You got your bleacher buddy there, you wouldn't even go to the bathroom.
Exactly. So I'm almost done with it with part one. We got one more coach to do, and it should be posted later this afternoon.
All right,
assuming you're willing to edit an 8,000-word article.
Everybody remember that we're on a three-day week. Chris, we kind of always are. We're generally done with the bulk of – I am anyway with the bulk of our content by, like, the end of the day Wednesday. But, you know, basically Sunday through Wednesday is a lot of work for me and Chris. So let's pimp that a little bit. Tell everybody what you're working on.
Part one of the coaching search article. I just look at eight head coaching prospects.
Can you give me the list of all eight off the top of your head?
No. Well, I can try. Matt Campbell, Jamie Chadwell, Dave Clawson, Charles Huff, Bill O'Brien, Dan Mullen.
Are you doing Tom Herman?
I'm doing Tom Herman.
Sweet. And Dan Mullen's been added to the list.
Yes, he's been added to the list. And why? I can't remember. There's one more. Billy Napier.
Yeah,
right. So that's part one. So I've pretty much finished all of them except for O'Brien at this point. And then tomorrow, hopefully, I'll have a much shorter article, part two, on candidates who could be candidates for the Virginia Tech job who have no previous head coaching experience.
Right,
so part one are guys with previous head coaching experience.
Right.
Part two is going to be like guys with no head coaching experience. It'll be much shorter because, quite frankly, I don't think
you don't think it's going to get to that?
No. Yeah. Witt greatly prefers to hire candidates with head coaching experience. And plus, there's not as much information on guys with no head coaching experience anyway. So that article is going to be a smaller pool of candidates, and with less information, it's going to be a shorter article. So I can finish that up in a day. But the big one is going to be this afternoon's, which will probably be in the 7,500 to 8,000 word range. So have fun editing that. and so then we'll run the article on non-head coaches tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, we'll do our poll like we did in 2015, like vote on your top three candidates for the Virginia Tech head coaching job.
So I texted Witt and I said, listen, Witt, we got some stuff we're working on. Don't hire anybody before we have a chance to run anything.
Yeah.
So I heard him say to Pete Morris, Pete, we have to wait on their press release because Tech Sideline's got to get their stuff.
Well, I will talk. Let's go ahead and talk about the timing.
Right.
Right.
That kind of segues into that.
Yeah. Think about some of the candidates that may be on Witt's list. We don't know for a fact who's on his list.
Right.
But
let me jump in here and say, you know, anytime in a situation like this, we start getting texts and DMs and things like that. What are you hearing? What are you hearing? We're not hearing anything.
Well, we're hearing things, but as we know in a coaching search, like we've done this enough times now, whether it's football or men's basketball, I mean, Ryan Odom was going to be Virginia Tech's head coach right up until Mike Young was Virginia Tech's next head coach, right?
Yeah.
So just don't worry too much about it. Yeah, pay attention to it, but don't believe every little thing you hear.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the timing of it goes, obviously you would like to announce somebody as quickly as possible, but some of the names that are getting thrown around. Now, let's say there is credence to the Billy Napier, Charles Huff, Dave Clawson. Let's say there's credence to all those rumors. And it's quite possible that all three of those guys will be coaching in a conference championship game on December 3rd. I don't think they're going to want any sort of an announcement to be made if any of them were changing jobs before that date. I think they would want to coach their team through that conference championship game and then have an announcement the next week.
Yeah,
so you're talking around December 4th, December 5th, December 6th time
range.
Yeah,
that Saturday is December 4th.
That was Clawson's prerequisite for taking the Wake job back in 2014. Like, he had Bowling Green in the MAC championship game. So he went to the MAC championship game, won that game, and then got announced a couple of days later as the Wake Forest coach, I believe is how it worked. So, and there's no reason to I don't think that's going to have an effect on the hiring. Like, if you think the right guy is going to be coaching on December 3rd and he doesn't want to make an announcement until December 5th, then by God, you wait.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about the next 5-10 years of your program. I mean, this is, you know, it's an extremely important hire, not just for the football program, but for the entire athletic department. You don't jeopardize that hire just because you say, oh, we have to have a guy hired on November 28th. No, you wait until December 4th if that's what your guy wants to do.
It's going to be interesting because, in a way, it's going to narrow the pool if you don't hear anything in the week after the UVA game.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's reasonable to think to yourself, oh, so it's a guy who's still coaching this coming week.
Exactly.
And it gets really complicated in the case of Luke Fickell. Now, is Fickell one of the guys you're doing?
No, I don't think he's a candidate at all.
Okay.
I don't think there's two reasons for that. Number one, I think he's one of the very few guys who can have any job he wanted. I think he could call up Florida tomorrow and say, I want your job, and they would hire him. I think he could call up USC or LSU and say, I want your job, and they would hire him.
Yeah.
I also think, if none of those jobs suit him, if he would rather have one day maybe the Notre Dame job or the Ohio State job or something like that, you know, Cincinnati's getting into the Big 12 and they got a chance to boss that conference. And also the timing, like they might be in the playoffs this year.
Right.
And he's not, I mean, he's going to want to coach them in the playoffs.
That's why I brought him up, because it's particularly awkward.
Well, he would not go anywhere until January, in my opinion. So that throws the timing off sort of for everybody. Like LSU, maybe they don't want to wait until January, so they take Fickell off their list and they jump down to their next pool of candidates. And that hall has a domino effect on everybody else to a certain extent. So I don't think he's a legitimate candidate because he can have any job he wants. We've also heard that it's basically a requirement for him and his wife for their kids to attend a really, really, really good private Catholic school.
Right.
And
the closest one's Roanoke Catholic. And
right. As far as
close
what,
enough.
Right. As far as what he considers a really, really good private Catholic
school. Now, that said, there are people that travel from the New River Valley to Roanoke Catholic.
They bust them from here.
Right. I mean, so it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I just don't think that's a realistic option. So he's not one of the guys I'm looking at. Plus, I think everybody knows, like Fickell's at the top of everybody's list. And it would be an absolute coup if Virginia Tech was able to pull that, but I don't think that's a realistic.
And put yourself in Fickell's place. If they make the playoff, if Cincinnati makes the playoff, then do you really need to go anywhere else?
When you're moving to the Big 12.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, like, at that point, you have the luxury of waiting for the exact right job. Like, even if LSU offered you the job and you did a complete study of their athletic department and you're like, you know what, I really don't think I want to work for that athletic director. Or there's some things in their athletic department I don't like. Then you can hold out and wait for... can hold out and wait when Nick Saban retires in 2 years, right? He's 70 years old. He's not going to be around that much longer.
Or whatever goes on at Ohio State. I mean, Ryan Day is doing great. It doesn't look like he's going to get fired or anything.
Of course, he's young, too.
Right.
So Fickell was the interim coach at... Help refresh my memory. He was the interim coach at Ohio State for a while, right? After... We'll have to look that up.
Yeah, why don't you look that up for us? I think he was.
I think it was after Urban Meyer.
I think you're right.
One of the times that he retired or whatever. I think that Fickell was the interim coach there. So we haven't even said hi to Nick yet.
Hey.
You're looking that up, Nick?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
So, Nick, I'm embarrassed. I don't know the answer to this. So those of you that don't know, Nick does play-by-play for Radford High School football. Did they win Friday night or?
So I got back at 2 in the morning that day, or on Saturday night, and no, we lost 56-28 to the Appomattox Raiders. They've won 5 of the last 6 2A state championships.
So does Appomattox have like one of the upper limits of enrollment at the 2A level? Is one
kind
of,
but they also just have freak athletes, and Coach Doug Smith is arguably one of the best coaches in the state of Virginia.
I played against Appomattox in high school. They're a real physical team.
Where are they located?
Close to Lynchburg.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
It's right past Lynchburg. You kinda, drive
kind of east of Lynchburg.
Right through Liberty, and then it's right there. But the game got delayed to 8 o'clock because the team and us got stuck in traffic on the way to the game. I mean, Liberty and Tech are releasing their students for a break. 81 was just a mess. 460 was a mess. And then so that got pushed back to 8, and then it's a 2.5-hour drive. And then... back to 2 o'clock.
So speaking of Liberty, this is kind of a random comment, but it's just one of the games I surfed through the other day. They hosted Louisiana. Louisiana's 9-1.
Yep.
They've got Malik Willis. They're 7-3. I'm talking about Liberty.
Yeah.
And did you see the attendance at that game?
Oh, there's nobody there, I'm sure. Yeah, also, by the way, I think Hugh Freeze is an extremely mediocre football coach. he's got a first-round pick at quarterback, possibly. And they held Louisiana to 295 yards of offense, yet they lost the game by 4 touchdowns. It's really hard to lose a game by 4 touchdowns when you're playing a Sun Belt team and you've got a first-round pick at quarterback and you hold them to 295 yards of offense. Yeah. Louisiana didn't convert a third down the entire first half, and they won by 28. I'm not big on his offense either. I don't want him as long as he would, unless he would give up control of his offense. I just don't think... That's what you want. I don't think you want Billy Napier controlling Virginia Tech's offense.
Well, Dabo cut him loose as offensive coordinator
exactly.
at Clemson.
Yeah, exactly. And their offensive numbers this year are not good. And they're in the Sun Belt West. I guess we're segueing into Napier now. They're in the Sun Belt West, and there's no other team in the Sun Belt West with a winning record. The second best team is 5-6 in the Sun Belt West. He's beating up on the Little Sisters of the Poor. And his offense is still only like ranked like 66th in the country. He has control of it. He calls the plays, and he's always been that way. He always wants control of his offense. And I just don't think he's a very good offensive coach, to be perfectly blunt about it. So I don't think that would – the fact that his offenses aren't doing very well against Sun Belt West teams, which are basically – Sun Belt West is like somewhere between FCS and BS. It's FBS. They're like – quadruple-A baseball players going up and down from the majors to triple-A.
Right.
You know, so I just don't think it would translate to Virginia Tech. So I'd be very, very hesitant about an Napier hire. And, you know, I know some people like Hugh Freeze because Liberty beat Virginia Tech. Well, Justin Fuente beat Hugh Freeze when Hugh Freeze was at Ole Miss and Fuente was at Memphis.
That's right? One of the games where Fuente made his mark.
I watched
the
game.
I think Ole Miss was a top 10 team at the time.
Yep.
All right, so let's pump the brakes on that and talk a little bit about the game against Miami. This was an interesting game on so many levels. I went into it with very little in the way of expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense in the early going kind of, I can't find the right word, validated my lack of expectations by essentially not showing up. Mm. Miami starts off with 4 touchdowns on 4 possessions. They go up 21-3, 28-10, and then things stabilize, and Virginia Tech makes a nice run in the middle, aided by an onside kick. So going into the fourth quarter, it's 31-26. And even at that point, so much interesting stuff had happened that I was thinking to myself, you know, the games against Miami and Virginia Tech, like this thing could wind up being an epic game that you talk about. Virginia Tech's made this big comeback, 31-26, and then it just kind of fizzled.
And then a whole lot of nothing happened in the fourth quarter. Like one play happened, and that was it. You know, you can sit here. Virginia Tech didn't have a good defensive performance in the back end. There were too many miscommunications in the secondary. Like
Jermaine Waller specifically.
Yeah.
He got smoked.
I just don't – well, a couple of those were actually zone coverage plays that looked like his fault, but they actually weren't.
Right. One of them was supposedly Chamari Connor's fault.
Yeah. And but, I mean, I'm not saying Waller had a good game because he didn't. But, you know, a lot of people were focusing in on Dax about why he was covering a slot receiver. Well, he wasn't covering a slot receiver. That was Tampa 2 coverage, and the safeties were supposed to be back behind him. And there was a safety way out of position.
Yeah.
There, you know, so he's taking some heat. But that was just, as usual, poor safety play from Virginia Tech. With the exception of Tay Daly, they have not gotten good safety play this year. And Tay Daly got ejected for targeting early in the game.
I looked at the preliminary PFF grades, and out of the 20 defensive players that were graded, there are four of the bottom five were in the defensive backfield.
Yeah, I would say
that. And Daly only played 8 snaps.
Yeah, exactly. Before getting ejected for targeting. I think that potentially could have been a different game if he hadn't got ejected for targeting because Jenkins came in to replace him, and I don't want to beat this drum again, but Jenkins is one of those guys who just haven't progressed since he enrolled at Virginia Tech. He had a dominant football game as a true freshman in his first career start against NC State. He looked great, and he's just gotten worse since then. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's something that's fixed in the offseason with the new coaching staff, so I don't want to like go deep into that or anything. But so it was partly Virginia Tech. It's also partly Miami because what is that, 5 or 6 games in a row where Van Dyke has thrown for 300-plus yards?
That's 5
can,
now.
Can you pull that tweet up, Nick? I actually do not have a – you know the one I'm talking about where he did something that no ACC quarterback has done in the last 15
years. It was 300 yards and 3 touchdowns and I think 5
straight games. Yep. And no ACC quarterback in the last 15 years has done that. Yeah. And you think about who's played quarterback in this league in the last 15 years.
Trevor Lawrence never did that? Are you serious? No. Right?
Right. That's really hard to believe. So listen to this. I calculated all this out. Miami had a 75-yard touchdown to Brashard Smith, a 55-yard touchdown late to Mike Harley. Charleston Rambo had a 39-yard catch that set up their first touchdown. Jacoby George had a 32-yard catch. And those 4 passing plays totaled 201 yards. Mm-hmm. And Miami's other 67 plays totaled 174 yards, right, which is 2.6 yards per play.
It was really strange. At one point, when Miami was up 28-10, I looked at my phone to look at the box score, and I think Miami was averaging 0.3 yards per carry at that point in the game.
Right.
It's like negative 6 rushing yards in the first half.
Yeah, something like that. And so you're sitting there like, how in the world? I mean, if you look at the box score, how in the world is Virginia Tech down by so many points?
It was bizarro world in a lot of ways. And so Miami wound up with 54 yards rushing on 30 carries, I believe.
With most of those coming late.
Yeah, you know, like even Tyler Van Dyke ran up the middle and picked up a bunch of yards. But that's – I know you can't play that game, that those big plays are a part of the game.
Yeah.
You know, but – It's the one of my favorite lines is, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Yeah.
Well, other than that, the play was pretty good.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And you can't sit here and say, oh, it was just kind of freaky that they hit some big plays on us. It's not freaky when that's what Miami does on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah.
That's what he does is he hits big plays. So you have to defend it. And Virginia Tech didn't. They just did a poor job defending it.
And granted, Van Dyke's receivers in most cases were wide open, but he threw very accurate,
extremely accurate passes, down the field,
not breaking stride, the whole deal, you know. And so, as far as Virginia Tech goes, just some things right off the top of my head. I'm not even looking at my notes. If you had told me going in that Connor Blumrick was going to have 2 touchdown passes. I'll bet you, you know, any amount of money you want to make that Connor Blumrick will have 2 touchdown passes and one of them will be to Dwayne Lofton. I'd have said, well, I'll take that bet. That's not happening. You know, so I thought that was just fascinating that Blumrick played as much as he did. He had 20 carries. Burmeister had 10, and I thought those guys looked phenomenal. Their 30 carries, they had something like 180.
Yeah. Oh, they did a great job running the football, both of them. Blumert gave Tech a major spark. Now, that being said, like, after those two drives, like, it became clear that his knowledge of the passing game just isn't there. You can't just run the ball every single play and win a football game. Like, you've got to be able to throw it at some point. And, you know, after that one drive where he hit the 4th and 6, which is hell of a play.
That was a
phenomenal play, but at the same time, that happens, what, like once out of 10 plays?
Yeah.
You know, you run that play 10 times, that you complete it once.
And that was Lofton that made that catch.
It was Lofton. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So like,
triple coverage.
I feel like they needed the spark maybe, but at the same time, once they got – it would have been weird pulling Blumberg at that point, but at some point Tech needed to be able to pass the football, and Burmeister was 14 of 17.
Yeah.
And he gave him a better chance to be balanced on offense. So I didn't really – I felt like he should have played the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And I also felt like – I'm not saying Blumberg shouldn't have played because he was having such a good game running the football. You still need to involve him in the running game.
It would have been odd to just pull him at the point.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, you play the fourth quarter, and instead of – I mean, at one point when Blumberg got sacked, they had Keshawn King in the game pass blocking. And you saw how that happened. Blackshear didn't have a carry until, 7 minutes left in the game?
Yeah, he had two carries, and it was interesting because J.C. Price was asked after the game, you know, why did Blackshear only have a couple of carries? By the way, the tailbacks only had 11 carries while the quarterbacks were carrying the ball 30 times.
Right.
And J.C. Price was asked about Blackshear. He gave an honest answer. He's like, I don't know. You know, head coaches don't necessarily make personnel decisions during the game.
I think Justin Fuente was.
Yeah.
And that was my worry when he got fired, is that he wouldn't be around the offense anymore for the rest of the season. and they'd revert back to odd personnel decision making, and that's exactly sure what they did. I don't know what to expect. I know that Raheem Blackshear, over the course of this season, 11 games overall, I think he's been Virginia Tech's best offensive football player.
Right. And if you look up the PFF grades, it even backs that.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And he had 6 touches. He just rushed for 100 yards last week. You know, he'd been averaging like 7 yards a carry for the last month.
I know.
He's got 6 touches. What are you doing? And I don't know.
Tavion has many.
I'm so glad we only have to talk about this for one more
Tavion
week.
Tavion has as many carries as Blackshear.
Yes, exactly.
I think Malachi had 4, and then you got
Malachi
had
7. He had 7 for 39. So
and Raheem King had 2, and King had 2. That's where the 11 comes from, right?
Right.
So, by the way, I thought Malachi looked good, but
he did look good. He's a good player.
He does look good.
How can you not give your best football player the ball?
It doesn't really matter at this point.
It doesn't. But you're right. None of it matters. So why are we even talking about the game?
So here's what I do want to talk about the game. And I saw somebody on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, it may have even been Dwight Vick, say, I don't know, I really enjoyed watching Connor Blumick run around out there.
It was kind of fun, for sure.
Yeah. It was a big run.
He's such an interesting athlete because he's so fast and rangy. Mm-hmm. I absolutely understand Texas A&M's decision to put him at the tight end H-back. Unfortunately, he's not a big guy.
No, he's not a bulky guy.
What sport should that guy be playing? Because he's such a good athlete and so fast and rangy, like Australian rules football or something?
Yeah, he's not a football player.
That guy's got to fit somewhere because he's just a fun
he could
athlete.
Be like one of those tall center fielders in baseball with a lot of outfield range.
Yeah, you know,
who can throw with a good arm. He can throw guys out of the plate and third base. Put him in right field.
Just watching him run around out there, the hair flowing out of the back of his helmet, that was just a blast, you know. And he loves the game.
Like, yeah, he really he plays with a lot of intensity.
One point after getting a first down run. Colin
is a 2-yard gain.
And we've got, he had what, a couple of touchdown runs like early in the season against I think Middle Tennessee and Richmond.
Yeah.
And we have a treasure trove of photos of him celebrating his touchdowns. That dude gets fired up and loves playing the game.
Yeah, I think he's a good athlete. He can really help us in some fashion. I think he can help us more than just being a backup quarterback and getting occasional carries. I would like to bring in another quarterback in the transfer portal this offseason. I would like for Burmeister to stay and have those guys fight it out. I would like to put, since hopefully we'll have a revamped strength and conditioning staff,
right,
pump Blumrick up to about 230 pounds and actually use him in an H-back type role. I don't know what kind of blocker he is. I assume he has decent hands because, I mean, you're a quarterback these days. You have to have good hands because you're catching snaps.
Yeah.
Right?
So, yeah, I think he can contribute.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you know off the top of your head how many years he has left?
He's a redshirt junior.
2 years.
2 years, I think, because COVID doesn't count. So
right.
I think, but I'm not positive on that.
Well, that's up for the next
time. Or no, it might be one more year after this because Burmeister is also listed as a redshirt junior, and he would be a redshirt senior next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he'd have one more year left if he chose it. But neither one of those guys went through senior day, even though they're both fifth-year players in college football, I believe. Neither one of them went through senior day, which indicates that they want to play college football next year.
All right. Like I said, that's for the next guy to figure out. So at the quarterback position, you got Burmeister. You got Blumrick. Maybe bring somebody from the portal.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Taj Bullock is currently still here on the roster. Knox Kadem. And Alex Orji has said that he's coming in January. But, you know, that's all up in the air.
I mean, you know, none of the commitments have decommitted yet. They're all just kind of sitting around waiting.
Did you see Rashad Purnell's Twitter feed this weekend?
What did he say?
He is apparently he was visiting Morgantown. There were pictures of him.
I mean, I believe it.
In full uniform.
Of course,
WV uniform.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to try to poach. People will try to poach, no question. But I don't think signing day is not until December 15th, and Virginia Tech's going to have a coach in place before then, I'm sure. So it's just nothing you can do about it right now. I really want to keep Purnell because I think he's the best pure defensive lineman in the state of Virginia, and he's from Highland Springs, and I think you just have
to refresh my memory, is he a tackle or an end?
He's listed like in a lot of ways as like a tackle. I think he's an end for Virginia Tech. I don't know that he gets big enough to play tackle in college, but I don't think he'd ever be like a dynamic pass rushing end, but I think he's, for what Virginia Tech's looking for, even though we don't know exactly what the next defensive staff is going to who knows. So, but I would prefer him at end. I just think he's a really good natural football player, and he comes from one of those programs in the state, Highland Springs, where I know their players are going to be disciplined and they're going to be well prepared and more advanced than players at some other schools.
Lauren Johnson, you know, I don't want to drill down into this too far, but he is one of the better coaches in the state. There aren't a lot of. I think he's approaching legendary status. I don't know how many state titles he's won. You know, of course, he's got to live a few years. You can't be a legend until you're old enough. So let's see. A couple other things to touch on about the game. It was great seeing Jalen Jones get his first catch.
Oh, and it was an unbelievable catch. It was an amazing throw right over the linebacker. He went up and got it, and he got decked. His helmet came off, and he still came down with it. It was one of the best plays of the game.
So, and then Dwayne Lofton just had, we talked about the 4th-and-6 catch, and if you follow me on Twitter, I was tweeting at Chris that those were stud catches because it was Jones and Lofton that you asked Fuente about in that preseason podcast, and he said studs. And we finally got to see that in game 11.
I mean, I've always believed the ability was there. I love Jalen Jones coming out of high school. And he didn't get to play a senior year in high school because he enrolled at Tech early, and Virginia didn't have their season last year until the spring. But I think he's been physically ready the whole time. I just think Virginia Tech's offense has been so out of whack, so to speak. What you're afraid of? Like, it doesn't even seem like to me like Jaden Payute's even on the football team right now, unless he's hurt and they aren't saying anything because he hasn't played in a month.
Yeah,
and
since the Syracuse game.
Right. So I've been worried about him hitting the portal the whole time. Now he has not officially hit the portal because it would have been announced if he had. He's probably waiting out to see who the next coach is and
what they promise him.
Yeah, exactly. and that's the same thing for Jalen Jones and Dwayne Lofton too. You was worried about those guys hitting the portal, and because I think they're talented players, both of them, all three of them. And I think we can keep them with the right hire.
Yes.
Lofton, who knows? He's from Texas, and the reason he came here was Fuente. Like, Fuente coached Lofton's high school coach when Fuente was at TCU. So that's that connection. But with the other two being in-state kids, I think we can keep them if they like the next hire.
Yeah.
All right. So I want you guys to help me to fill some things in here. And this is something I wanted to touch on, and that's Jermaine Waller.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at his PFF grades, and they were strong through – through the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games through the Notre Dame game. Mm-hmm. And then he fell off against Pitt. Very, very average grades in about the 50s. And it only shows him as playing 40 snaps against Pitt. Now, the next weekend against Syracuse, he only played 4 snaps.
Well, remember, he got hurt against Pitt. Yeah. All right, and then they tried to play him the first 4 games, or first 4 plays against Syracuse and took him out. Remember, I went on a huge rant about that. Yes.
And that's the blanks you're helping me fill in. Now, he played 56 snaps against Georgia Tech, and he graded out well, but, you know, that's Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, sure.
And since then, against Boston College, he's 65 snaps, and his coverage grade was decent. His overall grade was a 48. Against Duke, he played 50 snaps. His coverage grade was a 39.9. His overall grade was a 43. This is against Duke. Mm-hmm. And the preliminary grade against Miami, 41 snaps out of, I'm sorry, I don't know how many, a 28.8 in coverage and a 28.2 overall. And I did not catch this watching it live. He came up lame.
Oh, he did.
Late in the game.
He came up. It was the play he got called for pass interference, which I thought was kind of a tough call on him. Mm-hmm. But he came up and he was hopping on one foot. He was noticeably limping. So I don't remember. You remember what his injury was after?
It was leg.
It was leg. Yeah. Okay, and it's possible that it's the same foot injury that he had at the end of 2019, which kept him out most of last year.
And
so it's possible that yet another Virginia Tech football player has some long term injury that nobody can figure out or fix.
Yeah.
So
he also dropped the pick six in the game too.
He did drop a pick six.
He was there.
Camera guy didn't get on the air, but
So you know, like I said, Virginia Tech got down 28-10. It's just how interesting that we've talked about the development of the wide receivers, and they balled out. They had a great game.
Phenomenal. Trey Turner.
Turner had a great game until he got knocked out of the game.
Right.
Yeah.
I've probably got the details written down here. They make it 28-13 going into halftime. Then it's 28-20.
And then actually, it's 31-13 because Burmeister fumbled, then they kicked the field goal.
Yeah.
I think it was 28-13 at the half.
28-13 at the half.
And so really, the Virginia Tech defense held except for Burmeister fumbling on the 20, and they converted that to a field goal to get to 31.
But that was a 3-and-out still.
Yeah, still.
That was a 3-and-out.
That's right. Yeah. You know, and then they gave up the 55-yarder to Harley late in the game.
Right.
And so I think the other thing that I wanted to talk about was, I know that people they want to talk about the bad fourth down spot.
Yes. I thought it was pretty horrendous.
At what point in the game, what was the score at that point in the game?
It was 26-31. It was right after the last touchdown.
Yeah. If Tech had stopped them, I forget exactly where the ball was, only like on 38.
It was on Miami's side of the field.
Right, it was the 38.
So basically it cost Virginia Tech 40 or 50 yards of field position.
I see.
They would have had
They
would have had the momentum. Tech had just scored back-to-back touchdowns, and they would have been starting that drive on Miami's side of the field.
So all the momentum. To the defense's credit,
They did continue to stop Miami. I mean, they gave Miami the first down. And
it was 3 plays later, they punted.
Right, right. So
it was back at the 10, then Tech 3 and out.
Right, so it's not the Tech defense held even after that. But Miami got the punt instead of it being a turnover on down. So you're talking about a 40 or 50 yard flip and fill position.
We almost wound up in a situation where we could have second guessed J.C. Price's decision to go for 2. Right? Because it was 31-26.
I don't believe you chase points in the third quarter. I wouldn't have done it.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like it's not like J.C. Price is coaching for his future. He's trying to win one game. He's trying to instill confidence and things like that.
Well, he said we had the momentum. He wanted to make the most of the onside kick.
That's true. Like I don't necessarily think J.C. Price would do that on October 2nd in some random game if he was entrenched as a head coach.
Right. So you know, sometimes
he has nothing to lose.
Sometimes you follow your sheet and you make analytical decisions, and I think other times you have to coach to the emotion of your players.
Right.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, chasing the points is the right thing to do because they had a lot of momentum at the time to give them a chance to make another.
It was just Blumrick, bad read, or he was told to throw the fade. There are two wide open guys, Lofton.
You don't know exactly what the play is. Like, is he allowed to make those throws? I mean, we've had those conversations before earlier, and I don't want to have them again. The way Tech was dominated on the ground, I think they should, if they were going to go for two, I think they should have just run it with Blumberg.
Yeah.
Because they were breaking off sweet chunks play, of fake yards. It. Right. If it doesn't work, that's fine. I mean, I wouldn't have gone for it personally, but like, at the same time, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he has nothing to lose.
Yeah. So, all right. So I think I want to wrap up the football discussion there. I don't really want to get into the coaching search. I think we did that at the beginning of the podcast. I've got written down here in my notes, coaching search, but I think we pretty much covered it.
We've talked about the content that's coming out and there's no point in covering it today because if you're a TSL Pass subscriber, which of course if you're watching,
you're
you
about
should
to get
be,
a lot of coverage.
You're about to have an 8,000 word article later today about the coaching search, about the individual coaches and thoughts and things like that. So I don't want to take time saying the same thing twice.
Yeah,
right.
So I think we should. But we talked about the timing of it earlier, which I think is important. I have nothing else to say about it.
Biggest thing that I learned this week for football before we get away from football is that I think personally that running quarterbacks and really the pure dual threat quarterbacks are kind of dying out. And if you look at the most successful teams right now, it's pure passing. CJ Stroud is just launching them downfield. Of course, he's got three unbelievable receivers at Ohio State.
Right.
Then you got Georgia, JT Daniels tearing it up there. And then at Bama, that's just a pure passing offense. Right. Now he's not running either. So I don't think, yes, Blumrick running helped Virginia Tech, gave him the spark. But I don't think a pure running quarterback anymore is going
to
win football.
Yeah, you have to have some balance in your offense. And you know, I think he definitely gave us a spark, but I think at the same time you play that game over again.
Yeah.
And the fourth and six doesn't get completed. And you know,
there were a number of, like Trey's catch was incredible.
Right. And you saw that throughout the entire fourth quarter, he just didn't appear to be comfortable in the passing game.
Well, yeah, and you said that. You still should have put Burmeister in the fourth.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Tech would have had a better chance to move the football. I thought maybe they moved the ball a little bit from an emotional standpoint in the third quarter with Blumrick, like with a spark or whatever, but I think that eventually wears off. And, you know, eventually Miami's like, they're not going to be able to complete any passes. So let's just load up against the run. So you need somebody with more balance in there.
Yeah, Virginia Tech had 13 plays for 19 yards in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
Yeah. So
you want a Scott Glessner fact before we go away?
Right. So let's do the Scott Glessner stats with Scott Glessner. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, somewhere the paper's floating around in our high-tech graphics. Last time UVA had a winning record versus Virginia Tech was in 1961. UVA was leading 20-21 in the series.
Wow. You know, at one point, early in Frank Beamer's tenure, I think the record was 38-35. Tech was slightly ahead, if I'm remembering correctly. And then, of course, the 15 straight, UVA is never going to catch Tech. Yeah. If they do, I'm not going to be around.
And then Virginia Tech's defense did not have a turnover or sack. The last time that happened, 2014, Thursday night, Miami, Maroon Pants blowout.
Oh, the 30-6 game.
Yeah.
Where the scoring streak was kept alive by Mark Leal and freshman Isaiah Ford.
That's right.
So let's see. I believe that, so I made a mistake. I said Miami had 201 yards off of four plays. And then I calculated the remainder of their yards off of Virginia Tech's yardage. They actually had 210 yards off of their last 67 plays, you know. Doesn't really change the points.
The points the same.
And then Miami also got down into the red zone at the end of the game.
Miami had the ball the last 6.5 minutes of the game or something that. All right, so that's from Scott, huh?
Yeah. Oh, and one more. Virginia Tech has 11 games since 1985. That's as far back as he could go. By the way, shout out to him for doing these. I don't know how he does it. But only 11 games, no sack, no turnover, same game. Tech is 1-10 in those games. Only win, 2017 BC. At Boscon.
And that was a blowout, right?
That was the. That was just like a weird 17-3 or 24-3 or something. It was like BC's offense was incompetent. Like for some reason, we didn't sack them and get a turnover, but they couldn't move.
They just still run the ball up the middle.
Yeah.
Right.
That was when we hit the RPO to Sean Savoy over the middle for the long touchdown, if you remember that play.
All right. So.
And that's it. For Scott, that's there's a basketball one, but I'll save that for later.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Virginia Tech men's basketball. We're going to review the last couple of games real quick, and really we're going to look ahead because it gets serious now. The Hokies are 5-0, really only played one decent team, Navy, you know, so we'll talk about that when we get back. And once again, a reminder that the Tech Sideline Podcast is brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. Why don't you, during our three-minute break, visit southeastrtc.com? And welcome back in episode 210 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. So before we left for break, I pimped southeastrtc.com. And coming back, let me pimp techsideline.com. We got a my little 3 to 5 minute chat the other day at the beginning of the podcast. I think a lot of people took that to heart and visited the site, and we picked up some new subscribers. So if you didn't hear that, just I'll keep this version short and sweet. Just head over to techsideline.com, where we've been doing this for over 25 years.
Free students, too.
Student subscriptions are free, yes. And if you want to sign up for a monthly subscription, your first month is free. And like I always say, I know you're going to stay with us. You're going to love it. But if at the end of that 30 days, you're not sure, you know, you can cancel at any time and just get the 1 month free. So try us out. So next up, we're going to talk Virginia Tech basketball. I said going to the break that the Hokies were 5-0. Ran a couple of stats. Average margin of victory is 28 points. They're outscoring teams, I think it's 76.2 to 48.2.
5-0 against the spread.
5-0 against the spread, Nick says. So with here's one. The last two games were victories over St. Francis and Merrimack. With 4 minutes left to go in the first half against St. Francis, Tech led 23-22. In the 54 minutes of basketball since then, so 4 minutes, second half, and then a full game, Virginia Tech has outscored St. Francis and Merrimack 134-76. So there That's are times this year watching them where I've thought they were a little out of sync, like most of the game against Radford. Radford was tough defensively, and Tech struggled with it, and that was
well,
the game.
Radford actually held Navy in the 40s the other day. So yeah. Radford seems to be
it's
a pretty 47 good
47-33.
Yeah. So Radford seems to be a pretty good defensive team.
Yeah, and they're a big, strong team. And as Mike Young, I almost said Mike Jones, as Mike Young said after the game, he said, you know, they got up under our chins, and we didn't respond well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought probably the best stretch of basketball I saw them play, other than against maybe the whole game against Merrimack yesterday, I thought the best stretch was against Navy.
The first half against Navy, for sure.
Yeah, you know, they really came out dialed in. But overall, I have zero complaints. They've won every game by 20 plus.
Yeah.
The closest game was a 20-point win over Navy. So, you know, you look around college basketball and all kinds of teams go out there and just lose all kinds of games early on. And Virginia Tech's not on that list.
You're seeing at least one tweet per day from John Rothstein about it's all fun and games till you lose a bye game or whatever his tagline
Syracuse
is this
now
year.
Lost a
bye. Oh, Cornell dropped 100 on him.
Yeah, Colgate.
Colgate.
Yeah,
Colgate.
100
right.
on that Syracuse zone.
Right, exactly. So you're not going unbeaten in basketball, man. It's right. just the way it is. And, I mean, basketball is, yes, it's partly about physical talent, but at the same time, you have one off day and the other team has a good shooting night. Mm-hmm. You know, you can lose to an inferior team.
I was looking at the Radford game. You know, it was close in the first half, and Radford was 1-for-13 from 3-point.
Right, right.
If they hit half those, they're beating Tech by 6 entering halftime.
Right, right. And, you know, and that's just the nature of basketball. Now, so you don't want to, like, get caught up in the box score of, like, it's some individual game.
Yeah.
You want to look at the overall stats, the overall trends. And 5 games into the season, Virginia Tech, I believe, is between number 20 and 25 in the KenPom ratings.
23.
Yep. And they've got extremely similar rankings in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. I believe they're second out of all ACC teams in the KenPom ratings, which means if the net rankings were out now, they would probably be the second highest ACC team in the net.
Who's ahead of them?
Duke.
Duke.
So, oh, yeah. Number 10.
Right.
And Duke's good, but... It's still a lot of freshmen. Duke with a ton of freshmen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the typical thing of Virginia Tech's got a lot of guys with a lot of experience. Duke probably has a lot of young guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, well, Duke plays Gonzaga guys. This Friday. That'll be the real test. That'll be real quick.
Yeah, exactly. They're playing a much more experienced team with Gonzaga. So early indications are Virginia Tech looks like they're – so far they look like they're probably going to be one of the most consistent teams in the ACC this year. I think – UVA will get better. I know that they've looked rough so far, but they've got a lot of guys who aren't used to playing together. They will get better.
Well, and Houston, who they lost to, is really good.
Is a really good team.
And a ton of seniors on that team.
So I think Virginia Tech will either be – they'll be somewhere between the best team and the fifth best team in the ACC this year. Yeah. You know, and teams – there's ebb and flow to every basketball season, so don't get caught up in one or two little games here and there. But, you know, I mean, Virginia Tech to me looks like a definite NCAA tournament team. They're going to have some chances here in the next few weeks to pick up some quad one wins. I think they have a chance to win the ACC. Obviously, some AC – like Carolina could get better. Right now, Carolina's defense is a mess, an absolute mess.
So go over those. Carolina lost to Purdue, was it, 94-86?
But, you know, Purdue's a top 10.
Sure, they're
great. They just beat Villanova the next night.
But it wasn't even – this was the case. I was looking at the defensive efficiency ratings on Ken Pomeroy's before this weekend, before Syracuse played Tennessee and before North Carolina played Tennessee and before they played Purdue. And their defensive efficiency rating was low, was bad before then. And then they got lit up twice over the weekend.
89-72 against Tennessee.
Right. So they're giving up a lot of points. What date does Virginia Tech play? Carolina.
UNC. Yeah. They've got them here. I have the schedule.
That's over. That's right around New Year's.
Right. It's like 2 days after the Duke game, if I'm
sure. I thought it's a week apart.
Yeah. Okay. The 29th.
Okay. So I wish that was actually flipped to a certain. I'd rather play earlier. Carolina I could play first. Carolina earlier because they're struggling defensively right now, and I think Tech would light them up.
Yeah.
Well, so looking at the Merrimack game, somebody on the message board said something pretty sharp. They said, you know, Merrimack's a well-coached team and a good defensive team.
Right.
And they run a 2-3 zone. So Mike Young got to try some stuff that he's going to have to try later against Syracuse.
And all of a sudden the Syracuse 2-3 zone seems a little bit vulnerable, doesn't it, when you get it looks 100 way. Dropped on you.
Yeah. So let's drill down into that a little bit. I tried to watch during the game yesterday who Mike Young was putting in the high post and how they were doing, and Chris, did you notice that stuff?
It varied. I mean, at one point, I even saw Storm Murphy there. Maybe off
his sometimes Mutz was there.
Yeah, and Gasan was there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it varies. And Virginia Tech has a number of players that can pass. Like their starting lineup, I mean, everybody in the starting lineup can pass. And when you bring Gasan off the bench, he can pass. And Darius Maddox, you know, a lot of people thought he was going to be a point guard coming out of high school. So he's coming in and playing the wing.
Yeah,
if he's on the court with, like, Hunter Couture and Storm Murphy, all three of those guys have point guard qualities.
Pop quiz, who leads the Hokies in assists?
Naheem Aline.
No.
Or Mutz.
Mutz.
Okay.
And rebounds. He's averaging 6.6 in boards.
Yeah. And Let's Go Hokies chance.
He starts the Let's Go Hokies chance.
He did that again yesterday. Yeah.
So with no cheerleaders there, he really had to start it off.
That guy's character.
10-6-3.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn good. And a steal per game.
So, looking at I've got the season stats up here. Virginia Tech is 3-point shooting as good as advertised. So far, 42.5% as a team. Let's see, and that if you look at yesterday's game, they were 11-23 from behind the arc, and that included 2-7 from Hunter Couture, so they were 9-16.
Yeah,
you know, so
Hunter's been.
Well, you know he's capable. He lit up Navy.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Let me find him in the season stats. He's 9-25, so he's shooting 36% from out there. And you know he's capable of it. And I thought that Storm from behind the arc got off to a slow start this year. He is now 10 of 22.
Yeah, he's really picked it up.
He's 11 points per game now.
Yep. Yeah.
And Padula's 4 of 6. So I jokingly told Chris that I'm going to start calling those two Storm Padula or Sean Murphy, whichever you prefer. You know,
TikTok
and,
boys.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, I see a lot that I like. So let's talk about what is your most positive surprise this year. I know what it is for me. What have you seen this year that surprises you in a good way?
I would say defense with the caveat that they haven't played a strong offensive team yet, so we'll find out about that. But right. let's throw that out because for sake of level of competition, I would say the development of Gasan and Ojiaka.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the development of depth in general. Like
their footwork.
Yeah, I mean, just look how much Ojiaka has developed since he set foot on this campus. And the same for Gasan. I mean, that guy's handled for a 6'9 guy. He does some things that you shouldn't be able to do at 6'9.
I jokingly call him Kevin Durant when he's running down
sure,
the court.
Sure. Like if things break absolutely correctly, it's not outside the realm of possibility that he could play in the NBA one day.
I think he needs to put on some weight.
I would agree with that 100%, yeah. Of course. Like, everything has to – he has to continue to work hard in the weight room, get stronger, but there is a certain skill set that you're looking for that you could see some flashes in him.
Mm-hmm. So his shooting this year is really good. He's 14 of 23 from the field, including 2 of 3 from three-point range. Mm-hmm. He is 3 of 9 from the line.
Yeah, so. And but that's a mental hurdle.
That's the last frontier.
Yeah, that's a mental hurdle more than anything else. And after watching, you know, our football team the last 6 years, particularly the last 4 or so years, like, I have a great appreciation for player development now. Yeah. everybody pays player development lip service,
yeah.
But now that you see it, like, you see such a contrast between the two main sports, it really makes you appreciate it more. So Tech has really done a great job developing depth. Darius Maddox is a good basketball.
That was going to be my biggest surprise.
You know, when they were having some trouble guarding 14 yesterday, to a certain extent, he kept drilling those deep shots, and they stuck Maddox on him, and Maddox shut him down. And yeah. Maddox is a guy who can defend 3 different positions. He can shoot it, and he's a wing player with some point guard skills.
Yeah.
So and Virginia Tech has a lot of players that aren't necessarily point guards, but they got some point guard skills, and
if needed,
and they can all shoot it. So I just think it's a really well put together team, and even the backups this year are completely suited for Mike Young's system. And, well, yeah. I mean, everybody on this team was recruited by Mike Young.
Yeah. So, Maddox, people love Maddox. And full disclosure, I watch him play and I see, to me, his shot looks flat.
Mm-hmm.
And people have told me, yeah, but it goes in.
Yeah.
And yes, it does. He's 13 to 23 on the year, 7 of 11 from behind the arc. Mm-hmm. So, to me, it's not the most beautiful thing in the world, but it's going in, so I'm going to slow my game.
Right. No, you have to consider, he was 3 of 7 last year, and all 3 of those makes were like in 1 non-conference game against a bad team.
Within like 2 minutes.
Right. They were all within 2 minutes. So he's going to face some taller, lengthier, more athletic teams. So that's when you really look at that flat trajectory of that shot is right. There's a taller, more athletic guy jumping in front of him. So he's going to have to be, to me, like he's going to have to be really wide open to shoot it. But it's there. You know, he can make it.
I think for the most part, he does have good shot selection.
He does.
So,
yeah.
So Nick, what do you think? What have you seen that's positive that maybe surprised you?
That was probably gonna be mine. Was Maddox, his jump from last year, and it really stuck out in the St. Francis game. Didn't miss a shot against St. Francis, and behind the arc. And you said it's flat, but when you look at Beattie's Beattie's shot last year, you know, it's hard to get flatter than a shot like that.
Yeah.
So I really like Darius. I think he's also a semi-shot creator. He's going to get there. He's not there quite yet. Mm-hmm. And then Storm Murphy after the first two games, I think those jitters of coming out of playing the SoCon, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden you're playing, oh, man. You're not playing against ACC level competition, but still.
You're on an ACC team.
Yeah, in Castle, you know, it's not playing in Wofford anymore. So since he settled down, he's gonna be the most hated player in the ACC.
I don't know.
If he played for somebody else, our fans would hate him.
Yeah,
because if he played for UVA, we basically look like Duke now.
Yeah,
our fans have always hated Duke.
If he played for UVA, right. If he was a point guard for UVA,
our fans would be like, "Oh, he's a punk."
Yeah,
I don't think he acts like a punk. Oh, he doesn't act like one.
Not really.
But the whole dancing stuff, they still wouldn't like.
They would hate.
And then, I mean, I think he's electrifying. He really is. But I've played in a game, multiple pickup games where you do the inbounds pass off the guy's back and lay it in. I've always hated that play. And then when Storm did it, I was like, I guess I'm supposed to like it, but I think it's such a, you know, backyard rule play right there. But hey, it worked. So I think he's going to be hated in the ACC personally.
Interesting.
Especially by UVA. UVA is not going to like him at all. And best part about him is he's going to pick apart the UVA defense.
All right.
Splitting in there.
It has been interesting and refreshing to see a point guard make the three-pointer. make the mid-range jumper and actually take it to the basket. You guys know from my days commenting on what Bisa Beattie, my problems with Beattie weren't anything but the fact that I thought he should have driven to the basket more and been more aggressive offensively. Never mind the poor shooting.
So. Well, he wasn't confident.
Right.
He actually got worse as an offensive player throughout his career just because of confidence, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So.
Yeah. Storm is, you know, we had really good seats yesterday at midcourt and I noticed how vocal Storm was.
Yeah.
He really talks a lot
during
the game. Like he knows what's going on in there. He's a smart guy. He's a guy who if he wants to can get into coaching one day.
Yeah.
So back to OG Akpo, he's been my biggest surprise. And I noticed him being vocal at times, you know, especially defensively. I think he's really locked in and has figured things out and now he just needs to put in the time.
There's another thing. A couple other comments I want to make here about basketball. One of them is an observation I didn't make personally, but it was somebody on our boards who was at the game. He said at one point, two games ago, so I guess St. Francis, at one point Maddox's jersey was untucked, and Mutz came up to him and made him tuck his jersey. So when I talk about things like accountability and things like that, most people don't recognize that little things like that, if you see people doing like that on the court, that means they're holding each other accountable in the weight room and in workouts and things you can't see. And that's what leads to good player development. I mean, it's little things like that that coaches look at and say, okay, yeah, that's the type of guy I want on my team. So I really think Virginia Tech has good leadership on this team, good accountability, which will help them win more games than their talent level might indicate. I think a guy like Darius Maddox is a good example of, you know, he got caught up in a numbers game last year with Jalen Cohn and Joe Bamisil, a large number of twos and threes on the team. He was a guy who, fairly highly touted guy, but not like a top 75 kid or anything like that, like Bamisil was, right?
Yeah.
Virginia Tech, and I think this is, you could say the same for most programs, and I don't think coaches fully grasp this. They have to be very careful that they don't recruit too well. All right, because if Virginia Tech, like Mike Young's two highest recruited players as far as rankings go were Jalen Cohn and Joe Bamisil. They both transferred. Like highly touted guys aren't going to be patient with playing time.
They're both playing like, pretty darn well.
They are elsewhere, right? So you can't really blame them.
Yeah, Cohn I think had 25.
Right. I think
14.
The Tech's really the only thing I would change about Tech's roster right now is I wish they had one more wing.
And Bamisil could have been that guy.
Yeah, but he was never going to stick around and be that guy.
Yeah,
Tech should have instead of signing a top 75 player like Bamisil. If they had signed a top 300 guy, like a regular three-star recruit who was developable, and he wouldn't be one of those guys pushing for early playing time. He'd be patient because he didn't have a lot of other options. And maybe you have that extra wing right now. So you've got to be like everybody wants to see the best recruiting rankings possible, but sometimes that doesn't necessarily help you build the best long-term roster.
Does that worry you with Rice?
It doesn't worry me as much with Rice because I think
Mike Jones.
Well. Partly, but Rice, he'll come into the program when he might not start as a freshman, but you know he would have a chance, you know, with Couture and Aline both being seniors next year, and he can play the point guard spot. Like, he could potentially play 1, 2, or 3. So there's more roster versatility with him, in my opinion. But I do think you have to. That's something you have to think about as a coach. These don't necessarily go get the best player because if he's the best player, but like. He comes in and he's a freshman, and the two players at his position are both sophomores, and he didn't beat him out as a freshman. He's going to be gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, to a point, what made UVA's program really take off and get to national championship level was, if I remember correctly, Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome were both highly touted players, but they fit and they stayed.
Correct. Yep. Well, Kyle Guy was a McDonald's All-American. Yeah. They signed four top 100 guys, four top 75 guys in that one class.
Yeah.
But it took them like 5 years of winning before they did that.
All right, so we're already like we're over an hour into this, so let's jump ahead to what happens Wednesday night. I don't want to preview Memphis on Wednesday because that's an afternoon podcast and you won't really get to, unless you're watching it live, you won't really get to So let's do Memphis now. Nick's done some research on them. The Hokies play 9:30 Wednesday night on ESPN2 against a Memphis team that will probably slip into the top 10.
Yes.
So,
yeah, Memphis is legit. And everybody talks about, you know, oh, they're just a bunch of freshmen, whatever. By the way, they've played 11 players in the first four games.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty crazy.
Landers Nolly is on their team.
Yeah. They have eight players, more than 5 points per game. Three of them are freshmen. The other five, three juniors, two seniors. Mm-hmm. The starting lineup has only two freshmen in it. One of those, 17-year-old Imani Bates. And I was telling Ms. Stroud over here before the podcast that I had Sports Illustrated from 2017 to 2020. And the one Sports Illustrated magazine that I did not keep was the one with Imani Bates on the cover. Hmm. And I went through them all yesterday, and I could not
find it.
Yeah. But on the cover it says, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, this guy. And after that, that was in 2018 when he was a 15-year-old.
Right.
And after that, I started watching him on Ball Is Life, and I followed him throughout his whole high school career. Dude is legit, committed to Michigan State at one point.
So
he's from Michigan.
How tall is he? Did you say he's
6'10"? Yeah. Around 6'10".
And what position does he play for?
Point guard.
Oh, sheesh.
Yeah. So, the Magic Johnson comparison.
And he can pass. His vision, I would say, is his best quality is his vision. He can shoot a little bit. He's averaging 12 points per game. But his best is his vision. I mean, he's making no-look passes with ease that are ridiculous.
And so who will defend him?
Watch for
the biggest
them
question. Probably Alain. Yeah. I would guess Alain would defend him.
But he's still giving up 6 inches.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that's
going
to be interesting to watch.
Yeah.
So where's Landers fitting in? He is not starting currently, correct?
He is. Or he's coming off the bench, but he's still leading. He's scoring 8 points per game, which is fifth on the team.
Okay.
Yeah, they're a very deep team. They're second in adjusted defensive efficiency rating.
Yeah.
And I think they were fifth last year. So they're a very, very strong defensive team.
Now, the biggest problem, which is probably going to get them the trouble, and this is why I give Tech the nod of winning by 10-plus points against them, they're averaging 21.5 turnovers a game.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, well, the thing is, they also have a lot more possessions per game than Tech. Like, Tech has half as many turnovers.
Oh, they're running gun.
Right, they're running gun. They're going to, what do they have on average, 15 more possessions per game than Virginia Tech? Probably something like that. So their style of play means they're going to have more turnovers.
They're just going to run on you and gas you.
Well, they're going to try to.
Yeah.
Generally, I think it's easier to slow a team down than it is to speed a team up.
Right.
Like, Memphis will try to speed Virginia Tech up, but that's more difficult than Virginia Tech trying to slow Memphis down.
Well, and Tech also has the capability of speeding it up somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, but you don't want to get in a transition game against Memphis.
Careful,
Mike Young does not crash the boards. It's not his philosophy.
Offensively, you mean?
Yes, that's right. What I mean. Like, he wants to play a half-court basketball game. He doesn't want to turn it out. And so, like, Virginia Tech's not going to be sending, you know, their power forwards and small forwards and everybody to get offensive rebounds in any game, much less this game. He wants this game to be as slow-paced as possible.
Yeah. Now, they also have a big center, freshman Jalen Duran.
What size is he?
He is a big boy. He is 250, 6'11".
Oh, so he's only slightly bigger than their point guard.
Point guard.
Now, Imani's very slight. He's skinny. He's Kevin Durant. Everybody says he's the next Kevin Durant. He is built very skinny. But Jalen Duran's averaging 15 points per game and 10.8, so basically 11 rebounds.
Yeah, 15, 11.
So Kevin's got to make sure he doesn't get in foul trouble.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see Ogiako get a few minutes against him. Do you wonder if, and this may be stretching it a bit, if Mike Young will possibly try to put Justin Mutz against Imani Bates?
That's what I was wondering, too. Because Mutz is he's movable, and he can go east-west.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So they turn it over a lot. They're a big team, very good defensive team.
Yeah.
What else can you tell us about them as far as do they shoot the three well? You know, what have you done research on that kind of
for
stuff?
For 3-point wise, they're 38% from behind
pretty
the arc.
Good.
They shoot a lot. Imani has attempted 24 threes. No one else has attempted over 13. Mm-hmm. And they've only have three other guys that have attempted over 10 threes.
But tackle packet and – so Memphis will have an opportunity to make three-pointers against them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you don't want to give up inside.
If they have one of those games where they're 45 or 50%, then they're probably going to win.
Yeah.
So, listen, Tech opponents from behind the three-point line are 20 of 114.
Correct. And Memphis is a lot better than those opponents.
Well, and, yeah, you know. Right?
But Tech's defense is good. It is good.
And here's another crazy thing. Their free throw percentage, 65% as a team.
Right.
That's pretty poor. Virginia Tech is 74%, and which is...
Sometimes it's all about what player you're getting, which players you're getting to the line.
Yeah. Amani's only 64%. Yeah. He has shot poorly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But this is for Tech, man.
It's a big game.
It's a first chance for a quad one win.
It's on the Bright Lights, ESPN. Everybody watches the NIT Classic.
Yeah. And it's also their first game against a really big, really athletic team. Yep. So
an ACC-like team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. And we've also talked about the fact that it's in the Barclays Center, which is where the ACC tournament is this year. So I think it's great that Tech's getting an opportunity to – because I don't think any of their players have played up there, right?
No, Mike Young said he's never coached up there.
All right. So this is great. It'll get them a little experience. And in what should be a pretty good atmosphere, I don't know what the crowds are going to be like. You know,
the Memphis got a pretty big following.
Memphis basketball. Well,
it's more of a Penny Hardaway following than anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
They also have a shooting guard, who's 7 for 10 three-pointers, Tyler Harris. He's not averaging a ton. He's also 8 points per game, but...
Yeah, we'll
he's
see.
7 for 10 from behind the arc.
It'll be interesting to see if Penny Hardaway narrows his rotation as they take a step up in competition.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Now Memphis isn't exactly blowing teams out. Teams that they should be blowing out either. I mean, they beat St. Louis and the Billikens by 16. They only beat Western Kentucky, who was 1-2 entering yesterday, by 12. And then they also only beat Tennessee Tech by 24, but.
Yeah, only by 24.
But Tennessee Tech, for a team that has massive expectations, this Memphis team has ridiculous expectations. Yeah. They're not exactly, you know, taking everybody to the woodshed that they should be.
Yeah, the initial impression of Memphis for me personally is they're not quite the sum is less than the parts.
Coaching.
But
again,
they have a chance to end that narrative this year.
Yep.
They are a very, very talented basketball
team. They have a pretty darn good schedule ahead of them, too. They got Alabama, Tennessee, at Georgia.
Yeah, you'll find out about them within the next 4 weeks or so. You'll find out a lot about Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting contrast of styles, you know, of types of athletes.
And it's a great non-conference game because my guess is Virginia Tech jumps into the top 25 this week in the rankings.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, Memphis will be top 10-ish.
So ESPN can hype the heck out of it for the next 2 days.
All right, so again, that's 9:30 Wednesday night on ESPN2. I believe that David Cunningham is slated to have a full preview.
Yeah,
of the game for us. I think he's talking about writing a preview. David's been working really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, Memphis also in the KenPom is sitting at number 16.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I also wanted to say Tech wins Memphis, beats Memphis. If they lose, they'll most likely play Iowa State. If they win, they'll play Xavier. And
right.
Again, most likely.
Xavier's
32 in the KenPom and just knocked off Ohio State at home.
That's right.
And they've got two big, big boys down low, like 7-footer big boys.
Yeah, Xavier's all generally a big team. Yeah.
Man, this is awesome. It's getting serious. So,
and that's back-to-back nights, too. Or no, Friday. So it's Wednesday, Friday.
All right, so let's wrap it up. What have you got for us from the YouTube chat? Anything?
I do want to mention my Scott Glessner basketball fact. Mm. So this is the first time ever that Tech basketball has won the first 5 games by 20-plus points.
First time ever.
Mm-hmm. Virginia Tech football did it back in 2001.
I remember that.
And who was the team that they lost to that end that streak?
Syracuse.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be Syracuse.
Well, they only beat Boston College the week before by 14, but... So that kind of ended that streak, but then, Syracuse ended and derailed that rest of that season. Ironically, it is UVA week, and Blumrick, you said you want him to be utilized as a football player on the team next year. Could you see him? There is the saber position at UVA, which Keontae Thompson, number 99, is playing, and they just use him basically as whatever it is. Could you see him turn into that tight end, running back, receiver?
Assuming he can catch the football.
Yeah.
And we have no idea what kind of blocker he would be. But, you know, I would like to see him add 10 or 15 pounds. for a role like that. And you know, because some of
215, is that right?
Yeah. And so some of it like depends on the next coach is who the next coach is and their system and things like that. But I mean, I've seen enough of him where I feel like he can help us more, maybe at another position that he can just getting, you know, Wildcat snaps, because I don't think he's gifted enough in the passing game to where you really want to play him at quarterback very much, because when he's in, like, he's 5 of 12 passing, one of those was a drop, but you just see Tech was not anywhere near the threat through the air on the whole.
Sure.
So if he has to play quarterback next year, I would prefer, that's not a good sign, but I think he can help us somewhere else in certain ways.
Yeah.
Well, I hope the guy plays, because like I said, I love watching
him. No doubt.
Goldilocks. With Fuente out, Cornelson, was he marginalized at all this week, and will he be marginalized against UVA?
I have no idea, and I have no idea.
I don't know that JC's really mucking over at that side of the ball very much.
I don't think
I really
he is.
Just don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the personnel decisions were strange. The fact that Blumrick wound up with 20 rushes. It was all just kind of weird. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed watching most of it.
You know who had 20 carries in a game recently? And then Hooker against Alabama. That poor dude was probably sore the next day.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So, by the way, that's 3 games this year of 20-plus carries for Hendon Hooker right, at Tennessee. Right. So, like, other teams do this, too, unless they're the absolute elite teams.
Yeah. Again, like I said, you're not going to win a national championship unless you have a big-time passer. You got to be able to throw the ball. That is the obvious thing. It seems that, which is weird, that more in the second half of the season, lost more games due to the defense instead of the offense.
Right.
What is the quick fix to that?
Oh, I just think there's no quick.
Possibly two games.
There's no quick fix. It's I mean, I just think guys are more likely to be mentally checked out now. Some of them, like Waller knows he's not coming back, and for all we know, he's hurt anyway. Jordan Williams, who I thought, except for like one lack of tackle on the goal line, was okay the other night. But he knows he's not coming back. And they don't know who their coach is going to be. They don't know whether they're going to hit the portal or not. I mean, it's just they're unlikely to be mentally dialed in under those circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's – it'll. If we beat UVA, it'll be because we outscore UVA. Because UVA's defense is bad. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll have a full preview of that on Wednesday. That'll probably take up the bulk of the show.
And to be honest, I don't really have a lot of thoughts about this anymore. I mean, I want to beat UVA, but like, I'm much more interested in knowing who the next head coach is going to be. And I'm much more interested in knowing who the strength and conditioning coach is going to be and who the assistant coaches are going to be and all that. Like, I don't have my mind. Like, watching the Tech Miami game over the weekend was like the fourth most important thing I did all weekend.
I thought it was, you know, like I said, I just kind of kicked back and enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. Some of the weird stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
I know other
made
people,
for good football on TV.
Sure. It did. I thought
Barstool highlighted it really as their game of the week. They were, because they've all bet the money line that Tech would.
After the games were played?
No, in the game.
During the game.
Yeah, right. And they were highlighting it big time. They were all watching it live, tweeting tons of videos about it. So it got pretty recognized pretty well for a good game.
Yeah. So lost my train of thought, but I think anything else from the YouTube chat?
Quick answer: would you prefer I don't really agree with this question, but a quick winning coach or player development Mike Young type hire?
Oh, I mean,
because they said a buzz type quick winning games.
I don't think
they're
specific. I don't
really
know that there's a Buzz Williams out there. Yeah. I mean, Mike Young won faster than Buzz Williams.
Yeah.
Did.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I want somebody that secures our program, that gives us a good, secure program, that even when, you know, when he retires or takes another job or whatever, that the program is stabilized for the next coach.
Mm-hmm.
I want the best coach Tech can get. I have a complete disagreement with most people with regards to what constitutes good recruiting.
Yeah.
Justin Fuente assigned a top 25 class in 4 of his 6 years. With the exception of the 2020 class, Justin Fuente's recruiting classes on paper in terms of rankings were the exact same as Frank Beamer's recruiting classes. Mm-hmm. I just think that's where Virginia Tech's going to recruit as a school.
Yeah.
So give me the best player development coach you can get and the best player development staff you can get. And yes, recruiting is important. I want them to value relationships. I want them to understand how to get the best players, not necessarily how to get the highest ranked players.
Yeah.
The best players for Virginia Tech and things like that.
The
win now stuff is just like, this is, it's not like the ACC is a dominant league. Kenny Pickett's going to be gone next year.
Yeah, you know,
Duke stinks. I mean, UVA, I mean, Armstrong will be back, but are they going to be able to play defense? You know, you pick up like a quarterback and a safety or something in the transfer portal, and you have a good year in the weight room, which Tech hasn't had in, you know, half a decade now. And you could be a lot better next year, potentially, depending on transfer portals and injuries, because everybody's got to deal with the transfer portal. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, Tech might go 4-8 next year, but they also might go 8-4. It's just we have no idea what the roster is going to look like. So give me the best football coach. I don't care whether Tech wins. Don't sacrifice 4 years from now to try to get the guy who you think can win next year.
Yeah.
Just the guy who understands player development and building a program.
There are a lot of ways to measure progress in a process like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean this guy will come in. So Virginia Tech early in Fuente's tenure and in most of Frank's tenure was signing like 6 to 8 four-star players a year.
Even like some of Frank's years, it was only like 2.
Yeah.
I would say generally 2 to 7 ranges.
Yeah, but that's like not happening these days. And I don't expect that to happen right out of the gate with a new coach.
They've got 2 or 3 this year, right?
I'm talking about the last 2 classes. There have only been a couple. There was Alec Bryant and DJ Harvey.
Right.
In like 45 players signed. That doesn't mean I'm expecting a new guy. Even if he's a good recruiter, I'm not expecting him to come in and sign 10 4-stars.
Not 10, no.
Right. Because it takes time to build the relationships.
Not if you hire somebody who already has pre-existing relationships, which I think is a big part of this hire. I mean, I don't – like, people are throwing names out there like – I've included Tom Herman, right? But mm-hmm. I think Witt is looking for a guy who already has pre-existing
regional
ties.
Herman would not hit the ground running recruiting in the state of Virginia.
Depending on what staff he hired and everything that. But I mean, I think you want guys. I think Witt is looking at a guy with regional ties to Virginia Tech's footprint, right?
Yeah, he said that.
From Maryland down to Georgia, guys with ties, recruiting ties in that area. And they're going to come in, and it's not going to take them a while to learn the landscape. Like it took Fuente. They're going to know immediately about what they're dealing with up and down the eastern seaboard of the U.S. and the southeast and the mid-Atlantic and all of that. So I think there's some names that people are throwing out there that I don't think are realistic, because I do think that's something that Babcock is going to value quite a bit in this hire. So I do think Virginia Tech has a chance to – I mean, you saw how much better Tech's recruiting got – this past year, once they got some wrong assistants off the staff and got, you know, Lechtenberg elevated and Ryan Smith on the staff and Jack Tyler on the staff, and accompanied those better recruiters with a much improved facilities, with a new dorm, a student athlete performance center, a weight room.
And now you can actually coaching. Show off the new dorm.
Exactly.
Showing pictures.
Exactly. So I do think if you hire staff with regional ties, with Virginia Tech's upgraded facilities, I think Virginia Tech will be able to recruit well. Now, I think there are certain types in certain sectors of the state because of certain things that are going on there between them and one program that happens to be in a state that's north of South Carolina and south of Virginia. I don't think you're going to break down that wall anytime soon. But I do think Virginia Tech's going to be able to recruit well. But again, my definition of recruiting well is different than most people's.
Right. Well, yes. All right. So very good. So we've kind of pimped the content that's coming up this week. So with that said, I'm going to wrap this one up. Thank you very much for watching and or listening. Oh, by the way, the last podcast was kind of interesting, the one we did after Fuente got let go. It I think 5,400 audio downloads and 5,200 views on YouTube. And that's the first time that YouTube has gotten that close to the audio. So I thought that was interesting, and I have no idea why that was. So maybe Malcolm is somehow responsible for that in some way that I don't understand. So anyway, appreciate you listening and watching, and enjoy your week, Hokies. And we're looking forward to Memphis on Wednesday night, and we'll see you on Wednesday for the next Tech Sideline podcast.